The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
It certainly is The Big Lead, but I'm not Dory Monson. My friend continues to recover from knee replacement surgery. He is going to join us in the 2 o'clock hour. In fact, don't tell him this, Nicole, but I'm going to ask Dory to lead the 2 o'clock hour. It's his show. I feel weird and foolish and oofish. No, leading the show while Dory's on? No.
He's on the mend.
It's not right.
Yeah, but we're, technically, right, he's collecting sick pay on this. He shouldn't even be working.
I know, but still, it's immoral for me to attempt to lead the big lead when the man who invented the big lead is on the big lead. So don't tell him, but I'm going to ask him to just take charge and do what Dory does.
Okay.
Okay, so with that, let's get started with the big lead.
The big lead, big local.
Okay, so Danny Westneat helpfully reminded us a few weeks ago that it's all in your head. There's no property crime problems in Seattle. Everything's fine. It's down and it's all being taken care of, and our bettors have got it well in hand. And Danny did that without access to the crime dashboard, which, of course, the city of Seattle is choosing to not update, because if they updated the crime dashboard, then you could see, the truth and such. And you don't want that. Look, people know. You don't have to be from Seattle to know. You can drive through Seattle and see the fires in the homeless camps. You can take a glance at local news stories on Como or Q13 or Cairo 7, our news partner, and you'll see the crime is still here. You'll hear the business community saying, we'd really like it if maybe the Washington State Legislature would do something about, shoplifting, since there's now just open season at the Safeway in Des Moines, at the Safeway in Rainier Valley, that they don't even prosecute anymore. They don't even try to stop you. You just walk in, take what you want. Everybody knows this. It's common knowledge. Now, Danny Westneat's colleague, who writes some very interesting stuff from time to time. And by the way, when I critique Seattle Times, let me just emphasize bold, space, underline, italicize. It's really important to have local media. And the Seattle Times has done some amazing investigative journalism. So when they do that, I'm thrilled to praise it. In this case, Dana Beekman writes this, please. Seattle City Light struggling to keep up with repairs as wire thieves knock out Seattle streetlights. It's an interesting piece. It's a lot of money that we're being cost. He kind of suggests that he doesn't really know why this is happening. No one seems to know why there have been more thefts recently, he muses. This is from Safe Seattle on Facebook. Given that prices of copper have been declining. But then later in the piece, as Safe Seattle points out, he answers his own question. He talked to a Seattle City Light crew worker, Tosh Sharp. Quote, Sharp thinks Seattle City Light was slammed in 2019 because people realized the underground cables were ripe for the plucking. You can call the police, but they have other things to do, he said. By the time they show up, the guys are long gone. So they've gone from pretending to be Native Americans, raising money for causes and driving into Seattle City Light and saying, please give us hundreds of thousands of dollars of copper, and having the boss of Seattle City Light, they're the former boss, say, sure, go take all the copper you want. Good to go. So now folks are sneaking into the infrastructure to steal this. This is week after, a homeless person apparently got into the tunnels of Sound Transit and took Sound Transit's infrastructure apart as they vandalized it. But don't worry, Daniel Beekman, and don't worry, Danny Westney, all under control in the bottleneck of the Pacific Northwest, that which controls so much of our economy in the Pacific Northwest. So there's that. Then we get this. And it's fascinating to watch how this is reported. Now, I want to be super clear. Big fan of saving lives. I happen to have a life. My family happens to have a life. I am big, big into saving life. I'm also big into sort of observing how things are reported. Some of the local media is super excited about an overdose in a homeless camp because it shows people working together to save a life. And this makes sense. Obviously, we are all pro-life being saved.
I need you to call 911.
What's happening?
Somebody's overdosing.
Okay.
Hey, anybody got Narcan?
They already gave her some. She's not responding. They got her to get her attention.
home. It's bad.
Hi, I'm at the homeless encampment on the Smart Lot, and I just heard that someone is overdosing here. Yes, exactly, that one. Do you know what she's on?
Probably heroin.
Probably heroin.
She's barely breathing, tell him.
She's barely breathing?
They're trying to do CPR. I don't know if they really know how.
Yeah.
Are they on their way?
Somebody give her CPR, man.
The dispatch.
So they go on to help this woman, thankfully. But the reporting on this is congratulatory. That look at the community come together to help this woman. And yes, thank the Lord those people were on hand and they saved the life. But the question has to be asked. I must ask it. If we're going to employ these tiny villages all around our area and all around the Pacific Northwest, can we make some effort to say we're not going to allow drugs in here? Can we make some effort to say, if you're on drugs, turn them in? Can we make some effort to do that? Take the drugs outside of the tiny home village, etc. Can we have some common sense? If you had a loved one who was addicted to heroin and you took them back into your home because you love them and they need shelter and you don't want them out in the cold, would you actually also then say, and by the way, bring your heroin and set up a kit and shoot up in my basement? You wouldn't. You'd want the person off drugs. It's not that much of a difference. There is an effort in Pierce County. They want to create a sales tax to benefit mental health services. And I just have one question about this. The mental health services in our state are in a bizarre state of disrepair. Jay Inslee has cost Western State Hospital, about $40 million in federal funding, cost them their certification. You've had two criminally dangerous people escape. You had over, 300 missing master keys. You have staff assaulted on a daily basis at Western State Hospital. So Pierce County is considering a tax for mental health services. This is Pierce County Assessor Mike Lonergan talking with King 5.
So I've been here 7 years, and this is the largest increase in most districts that I've seen. And people tend to first say, why did you raise my taxes? The double-digit increases are in those places where the local school districts did increase to the 250 level.
Right. So there's the increase to the school districts, et cetera. We know about that. We know about the doubling down. Now these things are going to double up. But if you're going to raise taxes and it's going to be related to mental health, I just have this question. What's the outcome? What are you tracking? And do you have the capability to get people in who may not want to come in on their own? Because if you fail on those fronts, you're not going to get there. You're not going to get the people where they need to be. Because of the journey we took in adolescent mental health. And that's the wrong way to say it, by the way. It's family mental health. You got a broken kid, something in your family's broken. Doesn't mean you're a bad parent. It means that you've done something ineffective as a parent or parental unit. One of the questions I asked early on, because I'm just trying to learn about this, I'm so captivated by the insanity of the adolescent mental health care system, as I said, when kids are brought against their will to a residential care facility or a lockdown facility, how does that affect their treatment? Do you know what every practitioner told me? They said it doesn't. It doesn't. After about the first week, 3 to 5 days to a week, the kids adjust to being there, which is not that much slower than kids who sometimes go there voluntarily or who are brought there by their parents. Human beings sometimes don't know that they need help, but when they suddenly end up getting it, they feel better. And they don't even know they feel better, but they do. That's a bit of the local scene. Of course, there was sort of a big happening last night in the Kabuki Theater sense as we continue with the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, top national.
All right, so the Democratic debate last night, lots of anger on the stage. Everybody in the Democratic field really angry. Bernie Sanders gets off to a start. He has a number in mind, an exact percentage of what equals fair in terms of tax. This is exciting because we've been waiting forever to get that number. What is the exact percentage of your income that you need to turn over to Washington, D.C. so that you are paying your fair share? This is Bernie Sanders and Michael Bloomberg.
When Donald Trump gets $800 million in tax breaks and subsidies to build luxury condominiums, that's socialism for the rich. Walmart, we have to subsidize Walmart's workers who are on Medicaid and food stamps because the wealthiest family in America pays starvation wages. That's socialism for the rich. I believe in democratic socialism working people, not billionaires. Health care for all, educational opportunity for all.
Senator, thank you. Mayor Bloomberg,
the question was about socialism.
What a wonderful country we have. The best known socialist in the country happens to be a millionaire with three houses. What did I miss here?
Well, you'll miss that I work in Washington, House 1.
That's the first problem.
Live in Burlington, House 2.
That's good.
And like thousands of other Vermonters, I do have a summer camp. Forgive me for that. But where is your home? Which tax haven do you have your home?
New York City, thank you very much. Yeah, right, and I pay all my taxes. And I'm happy to do it because I get something for it. And let me say, I thought the senator next to me was half right. I agree we should raise taxes on the... I disagree with the senator on the wealth tax, but I do agree with her that the rich aren't paying their fair share. We should raise taxes on the rich. I did that as mayor in New York City.
Dan, did anyone get to the number? What was the number that's going to be the fair share? A couple things. When you go to a company and you say you're not going to have to pay 35% or 25% or 10%, you can keep 90% of your earnings. That's the opposite of socialism. Socialism is we have it all. It all belongs to us. We'll apportion it the way that we see fit to our friends and family, like Bernie Sanders did when he helped his wife take out risky loans that ended up bankrupting her college, right? That's what he's talking about. Second thing on this, this idea that this is all socialism and what Bernie's trying to do here is he's trying to make something into something it's not. And you can see that technique. But here's the test. Ultimate test for me. What is more fair than this? Get rid of the IRS, scrap it. I'm sure those people, what would Mike Bloomberg say? I wonder if Mike Bloomberg would say, well, they have some gray matter. They could become farmers. What if you took the IRS, you scrap it, and you go to just the fair tax? Super simple, easy tax. It's based on consumption, and you get a waiver for the first $45,000, $50,000 you spend, right? Maybe you could even adjust that per area of the country if you like. After that, you're taxed at 10%. No write-offs. You can't go to Washington, D.C. and get a tax break. You can't employ a lobbyist to get a tax break. Everybody pays at the point of consumption. You get a waiver for life-saving medical. You get a waiver for education. And you get a waiver for the first 50 grand you spend every single year. You never make it to 50 grand because you only make 47. Guess what? You pay zero taxes. There's your fair share idea, in my judgment. Amy Klobuchar. Remember the tricks they like to throw out to people, like the hard questions, like, do you know this island called Presidio? Right? Where is that? So Amy Klobuchar was pressed on something she actually should have known.
Senator Klobuchar, when it comes to Mexico, I am the one person on this stage that came out first to say I was for the U.S.-Mexican-Canadian trade agreement. That is going to be one of the number one duties of a president.
Senator Klobuchar, my colleague specifically asked you if you could name the president of Mexico, and your response was no.
Yes, that's right. And I said that I made an error. I think having a president that maybe is humble and is able to admit that here and there maybe wouldn't be a bad thing.
Mayor Buttigieg, if you could let me.
Yeah, look, I wouldn't liken this to trivial. I actually didn't know how many members were in the Knesset, so
there you go.
But you're staking your candidacy on your Washington experience. You're on the committee that oversees border security. You're on the committee that does trade. You're literally in part of the committee that's overseeing these things. And we're not able to speak to literally the first thing about the politics of the country to ourselves.
Are you trying to say that I'm dumb, or are you mocking me here, Pete?
I'm saying that you shouldn't trivialize that. I made an error.
People sometimes forget names.
So that's a guy who is the mayor of a town, a very small town, on stage with the big leagues and given Amy Klobuchar that sort of response, I thought she should have stopped with, you know what? People make mistakes. Sometimes our minds blank. Here's what I do know. Just make a quick bridge. Here's what I do know. I know about the Mexican economy. I know about the sources of revenue. I know about the challenges they face with the drug cartels. I know about these things so that you are starting to balance out the scales rather than leaving it on what you don't know. Now, Joe Biden last night, he did a better job because Joe is, because, now look, I hate saying this. I do. I don't care for Joe Biden's policies. I think the guy, I think he's slipping mentally. And that's not fun. He's a human being, I think, but I think he's slipping mentally. I do. So I think he's in better stead when he's in attack mode because he doesn't have to use, you know, responsive synapses. He can just go to the script. He was in attack mode, and then he got asked what he's, shouldn't be a tough question, but in today's Democratic Party, it is a tough question. It's about putting executives who are affecting the weather, putting them in prison.
Vice President Biden, you have said that you want to hold oil and gas executives accountable for their role in harming our planet. You have even suggested that you might put them in jail. Which companies are you talking about, and how far are you willing to go? Vice President Biden, you didn't answer to my questions.
I thought I did.
What would you do with these companies that are responsible for the destruction of our planet?
So our planet is destroyed. Wow. Okay, so it's already destroyed. So now we're talking about putting people in prison for the creation of carbon. And I'll just say again, so we're all crystal clear on this. There's pollution. That's particulate matter in the sky. That no one wants that. United States has done better than any country on Earth on cleaning up our skies. Then there's carbon. You wonder what carbon is? It's what we exhale. This entire notion that what we exhale has suddenly become a poison is why they cannot sell the global warming catastrophe to people. Let's close this off on the national basis with this. The Washington Post ran an editorial, and this shows that, in fact, the Washington Post has their fingertip on the pulse of the American electorate, and they really are just of the people. They ran an editorial that says, give the elites a bigger say in choosing the president. This is an actual editorial they ran in the Washington Post. Marquette University political science professor Julia Azari says, a process in which intermediate representatives, the elected delegates who understand the priorities of their constituents, can bargain without being bound to specific candidates might actually produce a nominee that better reflects what the voters want. The professor is decrying a system whereby the Electoral College is tied to reflecting the vote of the actual voters. The kind of process we associate with more open and high-quality democracies might not actually help parties produce nominees that reflect the party's overall concerns. And yet, the professor argues that we need to get out of the way and let our betters make the decisions for us. Wow, Washington Post. Thumb on the finger or on the pulse of American society. We'll come back. Representative Jesse Young with an update in Washington State's legislature. Do you get to keep those really high capacity magazines, whatever that means? It's Todd Herman in for Dory Monson on Cairo Radio. Todd Herman in for Dory Monson on Cairo Radio. Joining me now, busy session down in Olympia, Jesse Young with the 26th District, Washington State, Gig Harbor area. Jesse, you can't stop bills when you're in that minority. Can't be done, right? You can't stop an anti-Second Amendment bill, but somehow you guys did it. Let's talk about this.
That was the rumor, wasn't it? I think we showed them otherwise.
Yeah, so this was a bill. Someone decided what a high-capacity magazine means. They decided how many rounds a citizen should be allowed to have. And just tell Dory's audience about the back end, the workings of this, and what happened down in Olympia last night.
Well, you know, we operate under a four-quarter type of scenario down here, like a football game. And during the second quarter, we process all the bills that are going to come off. We have to get them off the floor. And honestly, over the past summer, I've heard so many people say, we're just too much of a minority. We can't do anything. So I decided to do something about it. and started working with a couple of different groups of people that are stakeholders in the Second Amendment type of arena. And we kind of knew what they were going to do. They've been touting this. The Attorney General has been trying to kill assault weapons, or what his definition of them is, or magazine bans. So we started drafting a number of amendments to these bills. And, we have rules that say constitutionally we're allowed to debate any type of item that comes on the floor. So if you're going to run a big magazine type of ban or some Second Amendment constitutional type of thing, it's time to fight. And so we've dropped a ton of amendments on this thing to make it better. And we dared the Democrats to debate us on it. They chose not to do it. And therefore, because they chose not to have that debate, the second quarter ended. And by the rules, that bill is now basically dead.
Yeah. Yeah. And so can you give us, Jesse, some ideas of some of the amendments that people offered to, you know, as you're saying, make this bill better?
Yeah, well, the easy amendments that you usually start on, and usually when we're pressed for time, we're looking at these bills and we say, okay, well, what are the most egregious aspects of it, and what can we do to amend it to make it not so bad if, in fact, they're going to pass it over our objections? And so you start with things that say, okay, well, maybe a compromise is instead of taking a magazine size down from 30 down to 10 or down to 15, maybe can we compromise to get to 20 to 25? And so you get amendments that are around that. And, of course, if they throw other gremlins in the bills, you try to say, okay, well, do you have to press it that far? Can you pull it back? But the truth is, some of the other things that you can do with these amendments is you can go line by line through a bill and you can say, hey, you want to implement it on this date? I think it's better if we implement it on that date. Or, hey, you want to do this over here? Well, we're going to change it over here. You want to say that these people are bad if they do it this way? Well, what about that way? And you can get down into the technical weeds of this. And so we pulled out of a lot of amendments that covered all sorts of ground to find ways to, you know, make it better.
Yeah, you know what's fascinating to me, Jesse, is obviously my job is it's not my job anymore. It is sometimes my job, filling in for Rush Today and Borian Dory today. Maybe I'll do another radio show. I should do that. Thank you. There, that's decided. Jesse said I should. I'm gonna. So why did Democrats? Yeah, that'd be great. I'm sure that'll go really well in Olympia. I bet there's a bunch of Republicans who'd veto it. Not you, by the way. But why did Democrats ignore, and I mean ignore, gang violence? Because it's so predictable that you have neighborhoods where people are legitimately and rightfully afraid for their kids on a daily basis because there are shootings and assaults. And it's getting worse in Seattle with the open air drug dealing in Western Washington, as a matter of fact. And you could go in with RICO laws, bring the feds in. You could go in with zoning laws. You could go in with minimum wage laws, because I found out the gangs and cartels don't pay minimum wage. You could go in with secure scheduling laws. You could go in with the whole raft of regulatory schemes they put on them, in environmental laws. And you could go destroy the gangs in paperwork and have all sorts of excuses to get in, search their houses and their cars, and take their weapons. So why do the Democrats obsess about people like you and me, Jesse, who own some weapons and are legal, safe gun owners? Why do they obsess with us, but they completely ignore gang violence?
Well, you know, I think there's an underlying issue there that really gets to the heart of some of the political divide that we have down here. And I love how you use hyperbole to kind of make a point. But the problem here, I think, is that people don't want to talk about that. There is kind of an agenda that's coming out of the Democrat caucus. And usually when it's spoken about, the response is, well, you're just being conspiratorial. The truth is they don't want to talk about some of these real issue and solution type of paradigms because they have a general agenda, and that general agenda is to disarm us. There are so many reasonable points to be made on why our founding fathers were smart enough to arm us and give us the rights to keep and bear arms, or at least acknowledge our unalienable God-given right to have this safeguard. But the truth is, what we just saw yesterday with the challenge that we put before them, here are 100-plus amendments on the bill. If you really think that you're right, argue it. But they chose not to. They punted it because they don't want to talk about the issues that you just brought up there, that they don't want to really address the real solutions. And usually what they're trying to do is, if you look at their governance style for the past 40 years in the state, all of the core things that government is supposed to do to try to keep the rule of law, try to protect our freedoms, try to keep the economy going, or help let it grow itself, or maybe just fix a pothole, they let those problems fester so that it becomes such a blight that they can then justify passing their agenda through new taxes and then fund the social programs that they want to do. It's a broader type of scenario that I think a lot of Republicans have been hesitant to talk about because it seems conspiratorial, but the proof is in the pudding. I think you understand that. I certainly do, and I'm ready to have a debate and force the issue if we need to.
Yeah, and Jesse, it's you know, I'm very sensitive to the fact that, you know, Dory, and it's in 25 years at the top of the ratings, he's built a very broad audience. And Jesse, there's people listening to this right now who are uncomfortable around firearms, and I fully understand that. If you've not been raised around them, they can be very scary, and they should be if you're not raised around them because you don't know how to properly handle them. And I always just want to communicate to people this fact that it is an immeasurably low number of people who go out and legally purchase weapons in this country. I think it's 0.3%, if that, of people who actually abuse these weapons. So I want Democrats and people who are, you know, say, oh, come on, let's have some gun control, to understand that if you are truly concerned about gun violence, 2/3 of people harmed with guns are done so in suicides. A large percentage of the rest are criminal activities. It is such a small percentage of people who are, well, there's no NRA members involved in this. Such a small percentage of people. We have our gun safes. We've got our trigger locks. Jesse, I'm sure that you're as responsible as I am, if not more. That I really just want to say to people who are looking they're afraid of people being killed with guns as they should be, to understand that your Democrat representatives, they're lying to you, basically, when they say that we are the problem. Is that hyperbole?
I don't think that is. I think that, unfortunately, a lot of people are whipped up by that small minority. You know, Todd, I know you have an IT background, so do I. You know, I work with a lot of people in Silicon Valley that come from India or China, and I develop some pretty close friendships, and it's amazing the type of fear that they have of of Second Amendment rights or guns and how that dissipates when they come over to my house and they'll I've invariably been asked, well, you have these guns? Can we see them? And I'll walk them through just how much of a tool they really are as opposed to some scary thing. And it's amazing how quickly, if they have it, if you're talking to somebody that hasn't been indoctrinated into some type of fear-mongered scenario, they go, well, that's no different than a regular tool that I might use to fix a cabinet with or something. And, you know, the truth is the people out there, if they ever really want to see responsible gun ownership, go to a range and watch how careful these range masters are when they come down. I mean, the worst thing that you are ever going to see is some knucklehead try to go into a range and not properly use their firearm correctly, not treat it with respect, not treat it as though it's always loaded. You know, the type of safeguards that we do to adequately exercise this right is something that would instill a lot of confidence in people if they were willing to get by or beyond the hyperbole and the rhetoric.
Yeah, Jesse Young's with us, 26th District, Washington State. Stop the effort to take away reasonable magazine sizes of people's weapons. There's a neighbor we had, Jesse, who came to our home, kind of get to know you. They just moved to the neighborhood. And she said, hey, I understand you own guns. And I said, yes, I do. Would you like to see where they are? I know your kids are here. I think that's a great question you're asking me. Please let me go down and show you. So I took her to my gun safe. And I pulled open my Northwest safe, Liberty safe, and said, here they are. And she stepped back like they were going to bite her, like they were snakes. And she goes, you know, you must like really, really like hunting. I don't hunt anymore. I said, oh, yeah, sure, I like hunting. And I shut the safe, said, so those are all secured here. And I have one in my person. Here's where it is. And later I found out that she was a pharmaceutical rep. So we did a return visit to her home when we were getting to know her. I said, hey, I know that you are a pharmaceutical rep and an MD. Do you have any bottles of prescription pills around here I should know about for my kid's safety? And she said, oh, my gosh, I do. And they were in her office, Jesse, laid out. Like, anyone could go get them. So she went and locked her office down, and her husband came up and put his hands on my shoulder. He goes, well done.
Well played. So, checkmate.
Right. That's what people need to know. That, you know, Jesse, folks like us, we have kids, too. We don't want to see people harmed, and et cetera. We give the Democrats one bit of praise, though, Jesse, that I think they've done something very important down there? Is that okay?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, thank God the scourge of apple juice in these Happy Meals, Jesse, that the Democrats have taken the brave step to ban apple juice in these Happy Meals. I mean, I don't know how long I've been saying we need government to, you know, make sure kids don't drink apple juice in the Apple State.
How much you want to bet me that next year they're going to run a bill for subsidies for the apple orchards in eastern Washington because they're not using apples? See how that kind of works?
Yeah, I do see how that kind of works. That's great. How do people get in touch with you, Jesse Young, if they have questions about the Second Amendment or want to help you out in the Second District?
26th, and yeah, they gotta be careful. Normally I do this not when I'm not in the legislature. They can just reach out to the state legislative website. It's okay. leg.wa.gov. And there's a hotline down here. It's 800-562-6000. And they call that hotline. They'll direct them to my office if they have any questions. Happy to help with them. And certainly if they have questions about how to stand up for our Second Amendment or First Amendment rights or any of our rights, I'm happy to take those calls and try to be a resource for anybody.
Yeah, I appreciate you correcting me in the district. I don't know why I have that in my head today. There's some young women down there, young girls I interviewed, and I know you've been heads down on the Second Amendment thing. I really appreciate you focusing on that. So you may not have time to look at this, you know, sex ed bill that's down there. There's some young ladies, eighth graders, Jesse, who are down there testifying against this. So if they get a chance to come by your office or anything, I hope you'll shake their hands. Their names are Abby and Sarah, great young kids. Down there testifying, and that's got to be nerve-wracking. So I just appreciate you standing up for us and being a guy with a lot of common sense. And thanks for coming on Dora's show with me.
Hey, Todd, it's a great pleasure. And I think we'll be doing some stuff on the sex ed stuff, too. How's that sound?
No, that's good. I'll count on that, Jesse. I appreciate you coming on Dora's show with me. And go with Godspeed. Appreciate you.
Hey, God bless, too.
Dory Monson's show rolls along with Todd Herman filling in on Cairo Radio.
It's Todd Herman in for Dory Monson on Cairo Radio. I want to get to some of your texts at 98973, and hopefully we can do that the next hour. I feel compelled to tell you this. You remember she calls herself Mayor Jenny on Twitter. Mayor Durkin gave her State of Her Mind speech yesterday, which she chose to communicate as being the state of the city. And one of the things that she bragged about was this about library fines.
We eliminated fines in our libraries so that income would never be an obstacle to knowledge.
Man, that is a great thing to focus on because gosh knows that the people of lower economic means just simply are incapable of returning books on time. Can't be done. If you're poor, you have no sense of responsibility. That's the soft bigotry of low expectations. Jenny made that speech, Mayor Durkin, at the same time as saying, you know, Seattle's good, we're safe. There is a video that Safe Seattle pointed at, some security companies, I think, posted. And we're going to try to find some people to talk about this. It's from 15th Avenue Northwest and 50th Street in Ballard. And in the video, there is a tent, you know, tent city. And there's bicycle parts, and you know what they look like. It's on a sidewalk, so it's right on the edge of a sidewalk, probably near a residential neighborhood. And a fire begins in one of the tents. And out pops a really young lady. And I wouldn't be surprised in the least to find out she's 15 or 16 years old. It's hard to tell in the video. She might be in her 20s. I wouldn't be surprised if she's not an adult. She pops out of the tent. A guy with a leather jacket pops out of the tent. They're both looking very, very rugged, very strung out, probably on drugs. I'm guessing. Something tells me this. The tent continues to burn. Eventually, a couple guys try to put out the tent with blankets. At one point in the video, about 4 minutes and 30 seconds into the video, hopefully we can put this on Dory's social pages so people can see this, maybe identify these guys. A man from another tent comes out and pushes this young lady, maybe teenage girl, into the burning tent. He is trying to push her into the burning tent when a gentleman comes across the street, and he may have been working, there's a tire store nearby, he may have been working there. He comes across the street and grabs the assailant and prevents him from pushing this girl into a burning tent. I didn't see any Seattle police come by. It's a 12-minute or so video. So, Mayor Jenny, good luck on that, or congrats on that, those library fines. That's great. It's Todd Herman filling in for Dory Monson on Cairo Radio.